Let's welcome in another guest here. Talk a little NHL, shall we?
Yeah, let's chat with John Hovind, NHL writer, contributor to SiriusXM NHL Radio. And John, before we get into the rest of the league, what do you kind of make of the situation here with the Senators as they fire Guy Boucher just 4 days after since GM Pierre Dorion basically said he was going to last the rest of the season? Just another notch in the belt of a dysfunctional season there in Ottawa.
It's funny that you just mentioned dysfunction, because that was the word that came to mind when you first asked the question. It's just, you know, every day or every week or every couple of weeks, it just seems there's something new going on around there. And yeah, I think you have to feel bad for the Senators fans. I mean, you know, you look around the league and not everybody can win the Stanley Cup, and not everybody can have a treasure chest full of riches like the Tampa Bay Lightning. But, you know, Ottawa is certainly, you know, the fans have taken more than their lumps here over the course of this season. It's just been one thing after another with taxi cab confessions and coaches and general managers and ownership and buildings and all sorts of good stuff. So it's really unfortunate. And you just hope that, you know, as the summer comes and the pages start to be turned, you hope that the next chapter is going to be a better one for the Senators.
Yeah, this past week, it was just remarkable in how much bad news the organization had. So you're right about that. We'll see if they can recover. One team that has pretty good news most of the year, and I don't want to say they've done it quietly, John, but the Boston Bruins are quietly, I think, putting together yet another pretty good season. I think some people thought maybe their best due date was going to be behind them, and they've had some injuries. It hasn't been one of those charm seasons. They certainly have an aging veteran in Chara. They have young pieces in place, but a lot of people thought they're due for a digression at some point. They have now separated themselves from the Leafs by a couple of points, and they're looking pretty darn good right now. How are the Bruins managing to do this with that stereotypical just one-line team that everybody says, well, you stop that line, you can stop the Bruins? Well, tough stopping that line.
Yeah, you know, the league is slowly, I think, turning into a first-line league and then maybe like two third lines. You know, there used to be a clear delineation between who's on the second line and who's on the third line. And now you just look at the youth and the speed that we're trying to bring into the league right now, and how some guys on those second and third lines are being used on the power play might be a little bit different. Guys might see more power play time than they would five-on-five time. So they get those swing minutes, as they call it. And, you know, it's just it's the way of the league right now. And I think that two teams, Boston and the Islanders, if we would have talked about a week ago, they would have been two teams that I could have said are quietly sort of sneaking up on everybody. But then, of course, last night, you know, front and center for the Islanders, and they're no longer sneaking up on people. I mean, you look at what they did to the Maple Leafs last night. But, you know, out east, it's the Tampa show, and it's the Toronto show. So, you know, Boston's just quietly been going about their business. And for me, they were one of the most intriguing teams coming into the trade deadline. You kind of had to wonder what they were going to do. They had a couple of injuries. They were trying to plug some holes. I will say this, though. I love the addition of Charlie Coyle. He was drafted in the first round back in 2010 when the draft was in Los Angeles. I liked him then. I was on record at the time when he was traded from Minnesota to San Jose, saying I absolutely could not believe that they were willing to give up on Charlie Coyle. You just don't trade a number one or number two center, San Jose. You don't trade a number one or number two center, even if it is to get, you know, Brent Burns. But I just love that deal for Boston. I think that Charlie Coyle still has another gear or two left in him. I think he has more to give. And I think that playing on sort of a veteran-laden team like the Bruins, I think he'll fit in there nicely. And he'll help transition as that team moves out some of those veterans in the coming years. I think he's going to fit in really nicely there. So I like the Bruins. I like them a lot. And when you have Tuukka Rask in goal, you know, he's one of those veterans, like a Lundqvist, like a Jonathan Quick. He can rise up at any moment and steal a series for you. So come playoff time, I think the Bruins are certainly going to be an interesting team to watch.
It's hard not to like them, especially with the run that they're on. And you bring up a lot of good points. And Pastrnak's been out, and they still are just chugging along. I think they've only lost one game, and it wasn't even in regulation since. But we saw last year they had the 7-game war with Toronto and then just kind of ran out of gas against Tampa Bay as that top line just couldn't do what they did against Toronto to the Lightning. Do you think there are some of the same concerns there if they do find a way to beat Toronto and do likely face Tampa again in the second round? Or do you think they're maybe better suited this year to withstand the rigors of playoff hockey and hold up a little bit better as they maybe advance in the tournament?
I always like to think that a team is better suited the second time around. Just I think that the players and the coaching staff, I think they learned something and what they go through the year before, and helping them get over that hump the next year is just sort of, you know, if you ask me to put a bet on it, that's what the direction that I would go. I just really like Boston, and I think if you're getting into a series, you know, against a team like Tampa or against a team like Toronto, it's going to be a long series, and you have to be mentally prepared, and that's where your veterans come into play. You know, the youth on some of those other teams can give you speed and can give you some energy and excitement early in a series, but those kids necessarily don't have the ability to dig down deep and pull out what they need later in a series, not because they're not capable of it, but just in many cases, they don't have that life experience. So, you know, it goes back to that old thing about having to learn how to lose before you can learn how to win. And, you know, Boston certainly has won, but not of late. They, you know, so this is an opportunity for them this year to really dig down deep and figure out what they need to do, how much more they need to give to be able to go a little bit deeper than what they did last year.
Well, I am very impressed by what they're doing. You know, John, it was an interesting trade deadline for a lot of reasons. And I think in particular, Columbus and Vegas were the teams everyone was watching. And Columbus certainly bolstered their lineup, but they're only a point up on a playoff spot. Vegas is more secure in terms of a playoff spot, but they're only a couple of points up on a playoff spot. But clearly both teams went out, hit home runs, went after big-time players, and are in all-in mode. Now, Vegas, different story. I think we kind of expect it, and this is a team that went to the Stanley Cup final last year. But Columbus have thrown all their chips in on the table. I'm curious your view on both those franchises and their thinking and logic and the moves they made.
Look, I think when it comes to Las Vegas, you just sort of have to sit back and let things unfold. They're still early in their development in terms of being a franchise, in terms of being a team, and all that sort of stuff. And the Pacific for sure, but the West really is more wide open. So I think if you're Vegas, I think you can be take on a few more risks and try to go for it, because yeah, you have Calgary sitting up there and you have San Jose, but you know, I think when you get into the playoffs, anything's possible out in the Western Conference. You figure at some point Nashville and Winnipeg are probably going to, go to a 7-game series and they're going to take one of them is going to take the other one out. So, you know, that's going to help you there. Unless somehow, some way you had to face both those teams, then I think you're really in for a tough one come the postseason. But out in the East, I'll be honest, we're sitting here 5 days later. I'm not sure still 5 days later. I'm not sure how to feel about Columbus. On my right hand, I want to say, wow, congratulations to the GM and the ownership group. They realize they're probably going to lose two key pieces in Panarin and Bob during the offseason. And they said, what the hell? Why not? We need to go for it now. We're going to push all our chips to the middle. We like our prospects. We think we're deep enough, and we can give up a little bit of our future in terms of picks in order to try to get some guys in here and bolster this roster for a postseason run. But then on my left hand, I look at the Eastern Conference and I look at the teams we've already talked about, New York, Boston. I look at Tampa, I look at Toronto, and I go, you know, I just don't think, even with the additions, I just don't have faith that in a 7-game series that Columbus is going to be able to get by those teams. So from that standpoint, I almost think that it was a little bit of wasted opportunity. And then I come back to the right side and I go, yeah, but what did they really give up? You know, while it's easy for all of us in the media to say they pushed all their chips to the center, they went all in, you know, and all that sort of stuff, what did they really give up? They didn't give up any sort of cornerstone pieces of their franchise. They didn't give up significant pieces of their roster in order to add those guys. So I think what's really going to be interesting now is what happens if this team gets to the Eastern Conference final. Is that going to be enough to convince Panarin or to convince Bob that, hey, you know what, this franchise is serious, look how close they came, you know, just sort of making it up over the last couple of months on the fly. Imagine if they had a whole summer to sort of settle things down and retool and give them another year at it. This franchise could you know, maybe go on a deeper run. So I just think that's probably, for me, the most interesting thing is not what's going to happen here in the playoffs, because I just don't have a lot of faith in the Blue Jackets sitting here today, but I think that what the impact of these moves is going to be for the offseason for their two of their big players, and then also you can add Duchesne to that. I think, to me, that's going to ultimately end up being the most interesting thing.
Well, so I've been trying to weigh what I would consider a success for Columbus. Like, if they make the playoffs and win a round with losing Bobrovsky and Panarin and probably Duchesne, and yeah, you didn't give up that much, does that make this gamble worth it, or do you really have to make it to a conference final or even a Stanley Cup final for this to really be a successful gamble?
Yeah, I think it's the latter. I think you have to go to the third round or you have to go to the fourth round. I mean, you know, winning a round, big deal. I don't think that's enough for these type of moves. It's not like it was a slow burn and then they got there. Sure, you know, they were up on Washington last year, so, you know, winning a round would be a moral victory. But come on, that's, you know, to me, that's a fool's game. If you're really talking about truly success, and if you're a Columbus Blue Jacket fan and you take your heart and put it to the side and you think with your head and you think with your brain, what would success look like? It wouldn't be a moral victory. Yeah, you're going to need to get to the third round. You're going to need to make a deep push. You're going to want to make a push that's deep enough that made those two players think, pause for a moment and think, wait a minute. Should I stay here, or am I still going to bolt out of town like I thought I was, or like I said, or felt I was going to, you know, all along? To me, that would be success.
John Hovind is with us from SiriusXM NHL Radio. Roger Lajoie, Josh Goldberg with you. I agree totally, John, and I think Columbus might be guilty of, you know, some teams in the past have done the same thing, is letting the fan base dictate what kind of moves they make, because right from the start, basically, the Panarin, Bobrovsky, and not dealing them stem from the fact this or a franchise that desperately needs some playoff success. We owe it to the fans to go all in. They're going in. And to your point, with Tampa Bay, even Boston, Toronto, I don't see Columbus beating any of them. However, if they, and they may not even make the playoffs, then what have you got left? So really, one playoff round is going to be enough to keep your fan base coming back for another 2 or 3 years? When, let's face it, subtract Panarin, Bobrovsky, and Duchesne from that team and the little that they gave up, where are they next year or the year after?
And you're right. And that's what it's going to, you know, it's probably going to be enough to placate the season ticket holders and to placate the fan base for now, because everyone's living in the euphoria of, wow, awesome job that our GM and ownership and, you know, management, they went all in. That's great. And we love them, and let's reward them and come back again next year. But you're right. Fast forward 12 months from now, and if this team's sitting on the outside looking in and they don't have a realistic chance of making it into the playoffs, or even worse, if they sneak into the playoffs and then don't really have an opportunity to make any noise because maybe some of those other teams in front of them became even better over this summer and on into next season. Yeah, it ultimately ended up setting the franchise back. So, you know, it's funny because in some ways, not in many ways, but in a few ways, it's similar to what Dean Lombardi did here in Los Angeles and making those trades to get Milan Lucic and Sequeira and a couple of those things. I always commend Dean Lombardi. I love when a GM goes for it. And I love the message that he sends to his team and the message that he sends to, you know, the players at the time. But when you then armchair quarterback it 6 months down the road, it's really easy to look back and go, ooh, wow, that one really hurt. You overpaid to do that, and there's going to be some repercussions down the line. So, you know, drawing on the experiences that you know, I saw up close and personal and, you know, here in Los Angeles, if this ends up being a Marian Gaborik or Jeff Carter type deal, then good on the Blue Jackets. If this ends up being a Milan Lucic or Sequeira type deal, oh boy, buckle up, because it's going to have a negative repercussion for several years.
I want to get your thoughts on the Sharks, because you look at their forward group and it certainly has an argument for being one of, if not the best in the league. And they've got some great blue liners, Carlson, even though he's banged up, Burns, Vlasic, on and on down the list. But Martin Jones's goaltending this year, sub 900 save percentage, a lot of soft goals. What's your level of confidence that he can be just good enough to allow the rest of that team to maybe make it to the Stanley Cup final or perhaps win it? Or are you wavering that he has a couple good months in him to go on that kind of a run?
I don't waver on the Sharks for a couple of reasons. One is they have Joe Thornton. I think he's one of the ultimate professionals in the game. I think he's a big game player. I think he's capable of rising to the occasion when needed. I look in that locker room and I love the fact that they're loose. It's cost them at times, you know, that they haven't been serious enough or haven't been focused enough. And, you know, especially against Los Angeles, but by and large, that group is a pretty loose group. They keep the room loose. And they don't let things get to them. And, you know, that's important come playoff time, because there's a lot of adversity the team has to face, you know, especially if they're going to go deep in the playoffs. From a goaltending standpoint, the Pacific Division and the Western Conference, as I mentioned earlier, is a complete disaster. I don't think that Martin Jones' goaltending is going to really be a problem. Can he best what Calgary is going to put up in a 7-game series? Sure, probably. But if you want to make an argument that Calgary can beat them in a 7-game series, I'm not going to fist fight you over it, because I just think that goaltending is not going to be what's going to separate those two teams. If you think about a matchup with Vegas, they lost the loss. But if it's a matchup with Vegas, I mean, Marc-Andre Fleury at any given time can be Marc-Andre Fleury. But if he's not, vintage flower, then and if that team doesn't get the offense that they would need to go toe to toe in a run and gun series with San Jose, then, you know, San Jose is going to come out on top. So I have confidence in the Sharks. I think they're a professional organization, a professional team. I think they're well coached. I like up and down the lineup. I like their players. And so I would feel comfortable going into a series with the Sharks. I think that when you talk about the Western Conference, you really have to look at a team like Winnipeg to go, wow, that's a team that scares me regardless of who the opponent is.
Well, Winnipeg, and I was going to ask you about them, and Nashville as well, and same way that Boston's been kind of forgotten about for different reasons. I think Nashville has as well, John. Here's a team that was in the Stanley Cup Final just 2 years ago, went deep in the playoffs last year, I think is loaded. I think they've got a lot of weapons, like a lot about them, and they're positioned nicely enough, even with a lot of injuries this year, they've picked up enough points that they're going to have a pretty good seeding in the division. If it's between them and Winnipeg, and I would agree with Josh and you about the Sharks, I like the Sharks despite any goaltending situations, but let's stick with Winnipeg or Nashville. Who in your mind is a better team right now?
You know, I'd have to go with Winnipeg, and maybe it's because at the beginning of the season, that's who I picked coming out of the West and actually winning the Stanley Cup. And I haven't seen any sort of an extended, stretch from the Jets that's made me doubt them substantially. It doesn't mean that I don't like Nashville. Like I said earlier, I think those two teams, if they meet up in the playoffs, are gonna put on a phenomenal series. And I think what's interesting is although the two teams are built differently, and although the two cities are different in a lot of ways, I think there's a similarity in the sense that their fan bases can almost swing a series. They can, you know, like a goaltender used to steal a series, you know, in a generation ago. If it's possible for a fan base to steal a series, I think that's something that can happen in Nashville. It's something that can happen in Winnipeg. Nashville is just a magical, magical place. It's sort of like what it was like going to Vegas last year as well. You know, Vegas, it's unreal. If you haven't been to Vegas, you haven't been to T-Mobile and seen a game there live, it's just a completely different experience. It's unlike anything that you can imagine and unlike what you've heard. It's even better. And Nashville is kind of the same thing. And then in Winnipeg, you know, it's funny. You hear players talk about they don't like going into Winnipeg. Well, why would you like going into Winnipeg? I mean, it's difficult to get there. The weather's not great. There's 14,000 fans sitting right on top of you, and they're ready to call you out for any mistake that you make. And you're playing against a team that has offense, defense, and goaltending, and is coached pretty damn well also. So, you know, who wants to go into that town? It's kind of like asking people, back in 2014, hey, what do you think about going out to beautiful Southern California and making that trip through Anaheim, L.A., and San Jose? I mean, that was a murderer's row. The Bermuda Triangle to try to hit those three teams in one trip. So I like Nashville. I just think at the end of the day, I like Winnipeg just a smidge better.